This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to welcome you to another in our series, The Best in Islam. In this series, we continue to look at what Allah and His Messenger have identified as being the best. From an Islamic perspective, within the Islamic practices, human society, best in all aspects of life. And in this episode, we'll be looking at what is best with regards to marriage for women when it comes to men. What is the best man for a woman to marry? We have a verse from the Quran in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala specified that وَلَا تُنْكِحُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَتَّى يُؤْمِنُوا وَلَا عَبْدٌ مُؤْمِنٌ خَيْرٌ مِنْ مُشْرِكٍ وَلَوْ أَعْجَبَكُمْ. Do not marry the idol worshippers until they believe. Indeed, a believing slave is better than a free idol worshipper, in spite of how pleasing he may seem to you. This verse is considered the definitive verse with regards to Muslim women being not allowed to marry other than Muslim men. For a Muslim woman to marry a non-Muslim man is impermissible according to Islamic law. We know that Islamic law permits a Muslim man to marry a non-Muslim woman if she is a Christian or a Jew, but not if she is a Buddhist or a idol worshipper, a Hindu, etc. He's not allowed. The exception is made for Christians and Jews because of the closeness of their nations to revelation. Their books still contain clear references to authentic revelation from God. The other books are far away, so far one may even question whether they had divine origin at all. So that exception is made for men, but not for women. Why is that? People would ask today. In the past, nobody asked the question. But in these times where male-female equality has become, you know, a major issue from Western civilization, they've made this issue of men being equal to women such an issue that everything comes into question where equality, or what is seen to be equality, does not take place. So this is one of the cases that Islam comes under attack as a result of it. However, the idea behind it, I mean, what is behind it? Why would Islam not allow a Muslim woman to marry a Christian or a Jew, but allows a Muslim man to marry a Christian or a Jew? This is a question that could be asked and is asked. The reason being that if a Muslim man marries a Christian or Jewish woman, he, in the practice of his religion, will not require her to do anything which is against the teachings. When a Muslim man marries a Christian woman, for example, whatever he asks her to do to maintain a Muslim household will not be against the teachings of Christianity. For example, if he asked her when she goes outside the house to cover herself. Christianity does not prescribe that women should wear mini skirts, expose themselves. It doesn't prescribe that. In fact, the early images of Christian women were covered up, looking like Muslim women. If, again, Muslim husband, he tells his wife, I don't want alcohol in my house. Again, a Christian woman is not obliged to drink alcohol. So it's not against her religion what he would ask of her. And if he said, I don't want to eat pork. I don't want any pork in the house. Don't bring it in the house. Don't cook it in the house. Again, a Christian woman is not obliged to eat pork. Jesus didn't eat pork himself. So, of this, the basic and most obvious things that he might ask of her, these things don't go against her religion. Now, if we go to the other side, a Christian man, he tells his wife, because he's coming from a society where people, you know, are proud of their women being exposed. So he tells his wife, listen, I don't want you, because she's Muslim, I don't want you covering yourself all up. Because then people can't see you and appreciate you, and I don't get a chance to feel proud. So I want you to take off your covering. Wear a miniskirt. Now, all of this is against her religion. Similarly, if he says, bring me the pork. I want my bacon with my eggs every morning. So she's now obliged to cook and serve pork. And I want some alcohol. In my culture, you know, we drink alcohol regularly. So again, she is obliged to serve him alcohol, something which is forbidden in her religion. And as we said, it being the nature that women seek to please their husband, she is likely to break the rules of Islam in order to please her husband. So on that level, you can see why Islam permits it in the case of the male, but not in the case of the female, to protect her religion. Also the children. If we consider the children, if it's a Muslim man, his wife is Christian, they have children, then he insists that the children are raised as Muslims, she would likely go along with that. He'll put them in Muslim schools, whatever, and their Islam is protected. On the other hand, if the husband is Christian and he says, well, I want my children to be raised as Christian, then she is now in a compromised position, obliged to go along with her husband, and the children may be raised as Christians. And so their Islam is lost. So it is on the basis of protecting the woman and her religion, the children and their religion, why Islam does not allow a Muslim woman to marry other than a Muslim man. It is not to oppress her. It is to protect her, to protect the generation to come. Moving on to Muslims, and what is the best amongst Muslims, the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, was reported by Abu Ayyub al-Ansari saying, لا يحل لمسلم أن يجهر أخاه فوق ثلاث يلتقيان فيصد هذا ويصد هذا وخيرهما الذي يبدأ بالسلام. It is not permissible for a Muslim to avoid his Muslim brother for more than 3 days, so that when they meet, each turns away from the other. The better one of them is the person who greets the other first. So Islam has put limits to how long ill feelings can affect how we relate with our fellow human beings, particularly with our fellow Muslims. That if disagreement takes place, bad feelings are there. Okay, you're allowed 3 days where you avoid each other, but that's it. After the 3 days, then it has to be put aside. That's according to Islamic law. Now, what that means in terms of greeting is different, because though you might be in that 3 day phase of bad feelings, avoiding each other, if you meet for whatever reason, you end up meeting, and one conveys the greeting saying salam alaikum, it is obligatory on the other to respond, because it is a right of a Muslim that when he or she greets others, that they be greeted back. A response is given in kind. So that aspect, there's no compromise on it. For a person not to return the greetings is to sin. It may not be a major sin, but nonetheless, it is a sin. But beyond giving salams, you know, other talk of how's the family and these kind of things, okay, at that point, people can avoid each other. But the limit is that of 3 days. And the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, identified the best of these two who are in this situation to be the one who is the first to greet the other. In the sight of God, the one who receives the greatest reward is the one who ends that boycott. We'll see you shortly after the break. La ilaha illallah. Welcome back from the break. Moving on to Muslims and what is the best amongst Muslims. The Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, was reported by Abu Ayyub al-Ansari saying, لا يحل لمسلم أن يجهر أخاه فوق ثلاث يلتقيان فيصد هذا ويصد هذا وخيرهما الذي يبدأ بالسلام. It is not permissible for a Muslim to avoid his Muslim brother for more than 3 days, so that when they meet, each turns away from the other. The better one of them is the person who greets the other first. So Islam has put limits to how long ill feelings can affect how we relate with our fellow human beings, particularly with our fellow Muslims. That if disagreement takes place, bad feelings are there, okay, you're allowed 3 days where you avoid each other, but that's it. After the 3 days, then it has to be put aside. That's according to Islamic law. Now, what that means in terms of greeting is different, because though you might be in that 3 day phase of bad feelings, avoiding each other, if you meet for whatever reason, you end up meeting, and one conveys the greeting saying salam alaikum, it is obligatory on the other to respond, because it is a right of a Muslim that when he or she greets others, that they be greeted back. A response is given in kind. So that aspect, there's no compromise on it. For a person not to return the greetings is to sin. It may not be a major sin, but nonetheless, it is a sin. We'll be looking now at another hadith or statement of the Prophet, may peace and blessing be upon him, regarding dealing with the difficulties that arise from interacting with people. Whether it's better to avoid people, to avoid their negativities and the pain or the suffering that may come from dealing with them, or is it better to deal with them and suffer the pain? The Prophet ﷺ was quoted as saying, "Al-Muslimu إِذَا كَانَ مُخَالِطًا النَّاسِ وَيَصْبِرُ عَلَىٰ أَذَاهُمْ خَيْرٌ مِنَ الْمُسْلِمِ الَّذِي لَا يُخَالِطُ النَّاسِ وَلَا يُصْبِرُ عَلَىٰ أَذَاهُمْ." The Muslim who mixes with people and patiently bears their harm is better than the Muslim who does not mix with people nor bear their harm. So what is this telling us? It's telling us that there is no room for monasticism in Islam, where people go off into monasteries, away from society, because society contains all kinds of corruption, pain, and suffering, and harm, and things like this. So just don't deal with them, go away and worship God off by yourself. No, Islam does not recommend that. It's not to say that it is forbidden if you did that, you went off with your family, etc. It's not forbidden, but it is not recommended. It's not the better way. Those people who went into monasteries, they believe that it is better to be in that state than to be mixing with people. But the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, said no. The believer who mixes with people and bears their harm is better than the one who doesn't. So this encourages us to deal with the issues that we face in society, not try to run away from them. Because if we are to do that, then society cannot function. Society depends on people interacting with each other, providing services, paying for those services, exchanging goods, etc. All of that involves interaction. So Islam does not encourage any principles which would undermine the basic functioning of society through human interactions and exchanges. And also, what it is telling us is that for us to grow spiritually, it does require that we deal with the challenges of life as a general principle. In common parlance, people say, no pain, no gain. It's something like that. But it doesn't mean that you inflict pain on yourself to gain. No, it's not saying that. And of course, people who are lifting weights, they do inflict pain on themselves for their muscles to get larger, etc. So some of that exists in that field. But in the spiritual realm, it is not acceptable that one inflicts pain on himself or herself. But to live a normal, natural life, which will contain trials, difficulties, etc., without running away, hiding, in that normal life, we will grow spiritually in dealing with the various struggles that each and every one of us is bound to face. And this is one of the reasons why the reward for Hajj is so great. Because you can't do Hajj without being with the people, suffering their harm, being patient with it, not allowing it to drive us crazy. So we end up saying things, doing things that we shouldn't. That's why patience is so great, greatly required for us to achieve that Hajj, which is accepted by God. We'll now go on to another topic from the topics of what is best. In this case, we're moving on to names. We have finished the letter M, and we're moving on now to N. Abu Wahab al-Jushami, he stated that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Tasammaw bi asma'il anbiya wa ahabbu al-asma'i ila Allah Abdullah wa Abdurrahman wa asdaquha Harithun wa Hammam wa aqbahuha Harbun wa Murrah." Name yourselves according to the names of the prophets. The names which Allah loves most are Abdullah and Abdurrahman. The truest names are Harith and Hammam. And the worst names are Harb and Murrah. The Prophet ﷺ, in other occasions, told us to name our children well. Give them good names. Give them names which they would be proud of when they grow old or they get older. Names which have good meanings. Names after great figures. So here he says, name yourselves after the names of the prophets. So choosing names like Isa and Musa, Yaqub. These are recommended names. Yahya, etc. The names of the prophets of God. Because of who they are. As that child is growing up, you explain to them that Prophet Yahya had this life, did this, Allah blessed him, he was tried, etc. It's something for him as a child to look up to. Also, names which involve worship of Allah, Abdullah, worshipper, slave, worshipper of Allah, Abdurrahman, slave worshipper of the Most Merciful, and all of the other names that begin with Abd, Abdul Basit, Abdul Ahad, etc. All of these are good names. And also, the Prophet ﷺ went on to give the names, the truest being Harith. Harith meaning a cultivator, one who cultivates, bringing good, and Hammam meaning energetic, one who is motivated. And the worst are Harb, meaning war, and Murra, meaning bitter. So names which have bad meanings or harsh meanings, the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, recommended us to avoid those names. In fact, when people came to him with such names, he changed them. He told them to change the name, gave them another name in its place. Otherwise, we can have names which are from our own languages. They don't necessarily have to be Arabic names. Because some people sort of think that, well, okay, if it's not an Arabic name, then, you know, you're not really a Muslim. But in fact, we have many great Muslims of the past who had names which were not Arabic names. So they don't have to be Arabic names. But the meaning itself should be good. With that, dear viewers, I'd like to thank you for being with this episode of The Best in Islam. And we hope to see you in our coming episodes soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.